lost to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they fell off a cliff. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Bill.
And Janice.
Good evening and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for this Tuesday, July 19th, 2016, broadcasting to you live on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto, Canada, and of course streaming to you live on the web at songtalk.ca/livestream. Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. Brand new songwriters or established professionals or anything in between, together we share tips, techniques, and we will share cool things found. And hopefully together we will all learn at least three new things about writing songs. I think three. That's good for today.
Maybe four.
Tonight, I will be your host. My name is Phil Emery. And, of course, joining me tonight, as always, are the usual gang of wackies here in the Song Talk Radio studios. Mr. Bruce Herrett.
I'm wacky.
Proud of it. And, of course, manning the controls tonight is Mr. Neil Modi.
First Officer Wacky, reporting for duty.
And, of course, bravely keeping a careful eye on the social media onslaught is Nicole DiDonato.
Social media wacky here.
Social media wacky. And, unfortunately, Janice was too wacky to be here, so we hope she's doing better. During the show, don't forget, you can always join in the conversation by tweeting in your comments, questions, and threats to Song Talk Radio on Twitter, and we share them with the audience in real time. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest on this very show. And tonight, our guest is returning to us, is no other than Jeff Allen Greenway, otherwise known as Jag. Is a singer-songwriter and pianist from Toronto, Canada. His music is a blend of pop, rock, and jazz that has been compared to early Billy Joel, Elton John, and Ben Folds. His first album, Great Expectations, has been played quite a bit on CBC radio and college radio. And his new single, I Need, is now available on iTunes and Spotify. Thank you for coming in with us, Jeff.
Glad to be here again. Thank you.
Back.
Yes, you're back. Now, you were here a couple of years ago. Was it 2015?
2015, I think, yeah.
Yeah, I think I sent the link to your show, so hopefully that'll go out on the Twitter. So what have you been doing since you've been on the show?
I've been busy working on some new songs. I'm actually slowly working at putting a new EP together. And I just released the first single from that, which is going to be on the show, I think, a little later tonight. And I'm in the studio right now working on two more. And then hopefully when that's done, I'll have a full EP to release.
Now, you had mentioned, as we were discussing on before we started, that you're doing a lot of recording at home.
Yeah, I've changed things around a little bit. I spent a lot of time in studios for my first EP, which can get a bit expensive, you know, and everybody's sort of downsizing a little bit now when it comes to recording and trying to make ends meet. So I decided to try to do a lot of stuff myself at home. So I do a lot of my own recording, a lot of my own arranging and sequencing, that sort of thing at home now, as opposed to going into a studio to get it done.
Right. And then you're saying that you have... you go into a studio to get, like, live strings and stuff added on.
Yeah, for the real instruments, of course, I have to usually go to a studio to record.
Right.
This EP actually has a lot of strings on it. It's going to have some cello and violin. I have some really good friends who are string players who've helped me out with that.
You know, I think something, you know, like, I do a lot of recording at home, too, but when you actually add a real instrument, I know we all have, you know, like samplers and instruments that sound like the real thing, but when you have an actual real instrument, it just takes your track up to the next level, you know?
Yeah.
Like, even if it's a real guitar player, a real bass player, or a real sax player, you know, it is different, you know?
Yeah. I agree completely. When I perform, I perform live with real musicians, too. I try not to perform solo if I can, because I love the interaction between the players, both live and in the studio. It really adds more life to the music, I think.
Oh, but you get a whole
spirit going, don't you? Like, it's back and forth and responding to each other and all that with the live performance, definitely.
So when you're recording at home, Jeff, do you find that... So you write the song first, I imagine, on piano. And but during the recording process, do you find that certain things, arrangement-wise, maybe do you actually go back and revise, like, chord patterns or lyrics or anything like that after you started recording?
More music, I would say, than lyrics. Usually what I'll do is I'll do like a piano demo of the basic song before I start working out parts for it. Mm-hmm. And then once I've got that done, I'll find I change the arrangement. That's sort of the number one thing that sort of tends to happen once you actually get into the recording and arranging process. You decide, oh, you know, maybe I could do another, chorus with, you know, extra drums in it or, something else and that you hadn't maybe thought of before when you just did it on piano.
But you pretty much have the song written before you start that process, right?
Yeah.
What are you using to record?
I use Logic on a Mac. Yeah. I just recently bought a nice microphone. I've got an Audio-Technica 4040, nice. I think it is.
Yeah.
So that really made a huge difference. And a nice interface. I've got an Apogee Duet.
Ooh, those are nice.
Yeah, Apogee and Duet. It's beautiful. Like, it's very, very clean sound.
Some people, you know, you can get a vocal mic that's, you know, like $8,000, like a Neumann or something. Mm. And some people, you know, go nuts about those. But I've heard that Ashley Bono does most of his lyrics with an SM57.
Yeah,
he just sort of holds it, you know. Like
he does it, like he said,
it's like more of a stage mic, you know, because it's not really tough.
Oh, because he belts and everything.
Yeah, but it actually, you know, it has, because it does have kind of a different quality. You know, but I wanted to mention something that this is actually more about songwriting in general that I just found out. I was listening to a CBC radio on the weekend because I'm a huge CBC radio fan. They're almost as good as 1280 AM. You know, they're almost. Yes.
They're almost. They're getting there.
And they were talking about the song Midnight Train to Georgia, which, of course, is one of the great classic songs by Gladys Knight and the Pips. And I always thought just a perfectly crafted lyrically as well. You know, all the lines scan perfectly. It's a wonderful song. Turns out that the actual song was written as Midnight Plane to Houston.
Oh.
The guy who wrote the song was actually friends with Lee Majors, the $6 Million Man, for those of us who remember
Majors,
that.
Yeah.
And, of course, at one time, I think Lee Majors and Farrah Fawcett were married or living together. Yeah. Anyways, he was talking to Lee Majors, and he was talking to Farrah Fawcett, and she says, oh, I'm just packing for a midnight plane to Houston. And he thought, oh, what a great song title. Mm-hmm. So he actually did this song as a demo, and it's kind of a country Glen Campbell kind of sound to it. And another artist did it, and it actually charted a bit. I think it actually got to, like, number 40 on the Billboard charts as Midnight Plane to Houston, which is okay, but it's, you know, it's certainly not as good as Midnight Train to Georgia.
Well, is it objectively not as good, or just because you know Midnight Train to Georgia and you heard it so
many times? I think so, and I'll tell you what, because I've been thinking about this, because what happened is... Gladys Knight was looking for some extra tracks for their stuff, and she heard the song and she thought it was great. But you know, she said for her and where she came from, like, no one ever took a plane, so that's, and you know, they wouldn't go to Houston, but she was from Georgia, and when you really think of the way the line scans, you know, midnight train to Georgia, you've got midnight, you've got the nice sort of little rhythm, and then the train, which is the hard. Which is a hard T, and then Georgia. So you have two very crisp words. And then compare that to Midnight Plane to Houston.
Oh, it's a different feel.
You know, I think it is definitely an improvement. But what's interesting is that Gladys Knight actually sort of rewrote part of a song that was actually released for those. And, of course, you know, did far better than Midnight Plane to Houston.
Did she tell the original writer? Was it in she co-wrote with, did a rewrite.
Now, it's interesting. I don't know if she actually gets a co-write for that, because I don't know if back then things worked that way.
Okay.
But,
it just goes to show that even if you've written a song, recorded it, and released it, that it's still up for grabs for revision. Yeah. You know?
And think of
it,
like, I just, you
Does
know,
that happen to you, Jeff? If someone wanted to take your song and cover it? Has that happened yet?
Unfortunately, no.
Okay.
But I'm looking forward to it.
That'd be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah. And you might. Do you do collaboration in your writing at all? Or I notice that you've written these yourself.
I've done a little bit of collaboration, mostly with other artists on their songs, as opposed to for songs that I released on an album. But I really enjoy the collaboration process. I find that I'm, as a writer, I'm sort of lyrically challenged. I find I can write 10 really really good chord progressions, you know, original songs that work really, really well, but then I can't come up with the lyrics for 9 of them.
Yeah.
Oh. So it takes me a long time to finish.
Do you work away at it then over time? You work away, or do you collaborate on the lyrics sometimes?
I haven't actually collaborated on the lyrics. I've meant to many times, but for one reason or another, it just never happened.
Have you thought about actually teaming up with a lyricist, like Elton John? Because Elton John is writing the lyrics, of course.
Yeah, actually, that's something that I have considered, because I actually have a book at home of probably about 50 songs that have no lyrics.
Well,
so I should get on that.
Cool. Yeah, so if there's any lyricists out there, you know, to...
Would you be willing to hear from them?
Sure.
Give your home address? Can they show up? When's dinner? No, but we can certainly put that out there, and they can contact us through the station.
There's also an online forum called... It used to be called the Muse's Muse. Now it's called Muse Songwriting. So if you go to musesongwriting.com, and it's an online forum largely populated by musicians and lyricists, both. And there's a lot of collaboration going on that website. So people, like someone will put up a lyric and then ask, is there a musician who'd like to tackle this and write the music for this? And then they share it and do it online. Mm. Janice has actually released 3 or 4 or 5 songs based on collaborations on that website.
That's right. When you go to her SoundCloud page, she has them on her SoundCloud page. But I think it makes a lot of sense because, you know, we all have our strengths. And sometimes it's nice to think that we can do everything ourselves. But very often I've noticed is like when you get a real drummer in, or when you get a real, you know, keyboard player in, they're going to do better than what we can do ourselves because that's what they do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, especially now with recording. I mean, the temptation I know is to do everything by yourself. And I'm not always sure that's the best thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow. It's the age of DIY.
It takes a lot of humility. Like, I know when I started writing, it was like, I know best how to put a song together because it's my song and it's all about me, right? But if I think, you know, the pros, they collaborate. I think
professional
people, they do, whether it's outright collaboration or they bounce it off musicians they respect and stuff. So
when you worked on the album, your first album, did you bounce anything off? Did you work with a producer at all? Or
No, actually both of these are self-produced, but I have some really good friends who engineered it and mastered it and that sort of thing. So I work with different people at different times for that sort of thing.
Right.
But I had a very strong vision of what I wanted for it, and I haven't had a lot of luck actually trying to find a producer that sort of fit the same goals.
Yeah, it's working with producers can be tough, but when I know certainly you can, once you find the right one, you can actually learn quite a bit from them, because mm-hmm. some of those guys really know what they're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
But why don't we hear a song? So what's the first thing we're going to hear today?
Okay, this is a song off of my first EP. It's called Cavalry, and it's probably one of the most personal songs that I've written. It was written when I was going through a rather tumultuous separation, and it was when I wrote it, I had a really real struggle coming up with the words for this, as I often do, and I just sort of wrote it as a stream of consciousness at first, and then anyway, you'll hear when you listen to it and when you see the lyrics, you'll see what I mean by the first verse is almost talking about how I can't figure out what to say in the song.
Well, so now when you're writing, because you know with the guitars, very often we just kind of put like a C or a D. Are you writing down on paper, or how are you doing your actual? Are you keeping track of your ideas?
On paper. I have probably 50 or 60 different books at home with scribbles in them. Music and lyrics.
Do we have the lyrics up? Jeff, do we have the lyrics up on the website?
Let's just remind everybody about that.
Let's
go to songtalk.ca and you can download the lyrics or read along as we go along. And,
there's no bouncing ball, but you can imagine it.
Not yet. I'm sure there's a plug-in for that, isn't there?
There should be.
All right.
Okay.
No app?
All right.
Thank you.
just don't know what to say. I'm at a loss just what to say. I don't feel anymore. I can't give anymore. This well has bled bone dry, yet you ask for just one more try. I can't give anymore from these hands. Can you tell the wrong from right, and which one we should stand and fight for? Do we see anymore? Can we love anymore? We both were caught in this maze. At first it's fun till you're lost for days. I don't want any more of this game. There's no Superman, there won't be any cavalry rushing to save you and me. There's no master plan, there won't be any magic carpet ride. There's nowhere for you and I to hide. Don't know what to think. Can you please tell me what to think? I don't know anymore. I don't believe anymore. Leaves have turned and this chill won't end. You still think summer's round the bend. I don't want any more of this game. There's no Superman, there won't be cavalry rushing to save you and me. There's no master plan, there won't be any magic carpet ride. There's nowhere for you and I to hide. La da da. A caged bird will sing only sad songs to you. Let it free, let it fly, let these arms open wide. When the sun returns, you might find each other again. There's no Superman, there won't be any cavalry rushing to save you and me. There's no master plan, there won't be any magic carpet ride. There's nowhere for you and I. There's nowhere for you and I. There's nowhere for you and I to hide.
Bravo.
Brilliant. That was Calvary.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Calvary by Jeff Allen Greenway on Song Talk Radio on CJRU 1280 AM Toronto. Wow, what a great song. You know, it's interesting because when I was walking around today listening to it, because I was listening to the songs before the show, you know, I heard it actually more as someone who was almost overwhelmed by, you know, the crazy world.
Mm-hmm.
But now that, you know, I know the history behind it, it's actually that much more powerful. It's, you know, I'm just going, wow, it's interesting how you can hear the song two different ways when you find out what the background is. But
well, it's kind of a universal thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
About things not working out. And, you know, it really, to me, is about facing reality. That whole, there's a kind of, when you hang on to hope in a relationship or in the world, that somehow there'll be a magical event. Someone will come to a rescue on a white horse or not.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Superman's not coming. The cavalry, the people on the guys on the horses, cavalry, and that's a interesting word to have in a song right there. But and there's not a magic carpet. There's no escaping, in other words. So this, to me, song is about something about let's get real, let's be real, let's have a real look at what's actually going on here. Right?
I think it's interesting because, you know, often when you write a song, you know, I think we've all written songs, these breakup songs, or, you know, and they can be a little bit kind of almost too on the button, but this is still open enough so that other people can read their own situation into it, which I think is I think the mark of a good lyric, because otherwise if it's too specific, then I think it just becomes a bit sort of self-indulgent, where this isn't. But I really like the modulation.
Thank you.
Now, which, you know, let's talk about that modulation. So it's it's like a verse-chorus, and then you did the modulation.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a bridge there before the modulation.
Right, which is
the last chorus is
the humming part.
Is this a second? Is that a second verse there?
Yeah, it's kind of the first part is kind of like first and second verse, and then there's a third verse. So the first verse
is like a double verse on top.
Like a double verse, yeah.
But the refrain or chorus is there's no Superman.
Yes.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
which I thought it was pretty clear that it was a chorus.
Yeah, it's pretty chorus. It's got the title in it.
Can you tell us a bit more about the modulation, how that worked?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because it's the only song I've ever written with a modulation.
Really?
Yeah. And
you're such a musical, like, keyboardist guy. I figured you'd be doing that all the time.
Well, sometimes I'll sort of go through different keys. I guess what I mean is it's the first time I've actually sort of taken the chorus up. In this case, up a step, right? It's going from C major to D major, basically.
And is that because you change the key in the bridge, right?
It changes at the end of the bridge. I think it just sort of happened by accident. I was sort of playing through the bridge, and then I ended up on the last chord, which was like an A sus chord. And then I thought, oh, you know, let's see where this goes. And it ended up going to D major, and I started singing the chorus in D.
Can you play an A sus chord for us?
Sure.
Know what, And then that goes to a D.
Yeah, it resolves really nicely to a D.
So now, were you not using the A sus in the other parts of the song?
No, actually, it was because the bridge was. Let me think here. It would normally end on a G, so it'd end like this.
Yeah.
And then I changed, going up one to the
D. That is so tasty. Yeah, that is beautiful. That's really beautiful.
You had a really interesting chord at the very end of the song. To hide, and I thought it was going somewhere. It went somewhere else. Do you remember what that is?
At the very end?
Yeah, just when you went, there's nowhere for you and I, there's nowhere for you to hide, and then this chord comes in, you go, what? Yeah, like it's suspended. That was one feedback I was going to give, if you're open to that, is that you did a trail off at the end. You did a little coda there, right? Instrumental coda. And I thought, since we don't know where it's going, that I really liked that chord just to stop the song there, because it would be like, you know, like, you know, we talk about this all the time, whether you should interrupt the expectation of the audience or fulfill it. And I suppose that it was very pretty, by the way, that thing, the coda you did.
Thank you.
I wonder, though, if it would be more in tune with the song of uncertainty of what's going to come, you know, what's in the future.
Yeah, I love that ending coda. I was trying to get my band to do it many times, and they just couldn't figure out what the hell I was on, but I just went, what?
So,
you just do that, you trail off, and we just do it, and we'll fade it out. And they're like, huh? We got a tweet in from Magnusine Handbook. Original tune, Jeff. It took lots of turns that I didn't expect, which kept it interesting. That's, of course, Mr. Eric Sorensen. Thank you, Eric.
I just want to get back to the question about the modulation, Jeff, because, okay, so The chorus is in what key or in what bass chord?
C major.
It's in C, and then you go to the D major for the bridge.
No, it's still in C for the bridge. Yeah, and then it ends on basically the dominant chord, even though it's a sus chord, but it's the dominant chord of D. So that's how it ends up going to D, and then you go to D for the final.
Okay,
right? Because that would be the five. So like, is that a standard chord substitution going five to the two sus?
It's not really standard. I think most people would probably go to the 5-7 or the 5 chord, and I decided to go to the 5 sus instead, just because I didn't like the sound of the dominant chord. Didn't really fit in the song.
Right.
So
for those out there listening who don't know what a sus is, that means suspended, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Could you give us an example of it with that?
Yeah, sure. This is the A sus 4 chord again, or A 7 sus 4, and this would be a regular A 7. It's a little different sound. It's suspended because it's not resolving, and then when you go to the major, it kind of resolves.
So the suspension means there's not a third, right?
Yeah.
So you use a suspended chord when you want it suspense?
When you want suspense. Because it's not major, it's not minor, it's somewhere else.
Oh.
Right.
It's a wacky chord, then.
Now, but in the root, I don't think it was... Is it the fifth in the root, or...?
No, it's the A. It's still the A, five.
Right? Okay.
Going to the one of D major.
One.
Yeah.
Well, that's so sweet. Yeah, lots of nice little bits and turns, you know.
I just got one question about the process. So you wrote, I'm presuming you said you struggled with the lyric, it was the last thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you wrote the music, so you wrote bass chords, and then did you write like just phrases for melody, like la la la's, and then put in the words?
Yeah, that's generally how I sort of write. I'll come up with, sometimes have a melody in my head, and then I'll fit chords to that. Sometimes I'll come up with a chord progression that I like, and then I'll think of a melody that goes over top of it.
But you never start with the words.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, there isn't any lyric that goes along with it, so it just ends up being la 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 la.
Right. Right.
So we write the same way.
How do you get to lyric from the melody and the la la? Does it evoke? So you never have an idea for a song. Like, I think I'll write a song about chickens and then go and write the melody and then figure out the words later. So you go to melody first and see what it evokes in you. Is that what you do?
I think so. Or so often when I'm coming up with the musical part of it, there's something that I'm feeling.
An emotion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's an expression. There's an emotion happening in the music writing part of it, which then carries over to the lyrics. I start thinking about what that music is sort of evoking in me lyrically.
Hmm. You know, it's weird. We forwarded an article, I think, last week about how to get to your second verse, you know, because some people get stuck in the first verse. Because I like to do things completely differently, I usually actually have like a second verse fully written or the bridge fully written. And then have to kind of piece other parts to it, you know. It's very strange.
Well, that's perfectly an okay way to do it. I mean, I had a song that I presented on the show a while back where I wrote the bridge was the first thing I wrote lyrically.
Yeah.
You know, it's not unusual. I don't know if it's unusual, but sometimes it just takes a bit of kind of examination to discover that what you wrote first isn't necessarily the first verse.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of people write the chorus first.
Yeah. Often I'll write a first verse and a second verse, and then I'll go back and change the first verse because I don't like it anymore.
Yes. Yeah, it happens all the time.
I had one little piece of question or feedback on whatever you prefer there, in terms of the scanning of the words, which as a lyricist is really important to me.
Mm-hmm.
As you rushed on purpose, I want to know if it was on purpose or you just want to fit in Magic Carpet Ride and You and I to Hide. So it went, there won't be any Magic Carpet Ride, always know for You and I to Hide. It was fast. And I love Magic Carpet Ride as a phrase so strongly. It's a very strong lyric that it's just an idea. If I was working on this song with you as a producer or whatever, I'd say, let's hear that phrase. Maybe the music's jarring, but more legato over that. But that was just something, it felt maybe that you were throwing it away. And I'm just wondering, were you throwing it away on purpose, out of anger? Like, there's no Magic Carpet Ride, there's nowhere you and I to hide. Because it's kind of said like that, very, very brusquely, right?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of anger in this song, as well as you know, sort of soul searching. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe why that ended up coming out that way, because it really is one person talking to another person where they're both in the same situation, but one of them wants to deal with it, and the other one wants to, you know, be in denial and imagine, you know, that something magical is
going to happen. Oh, we've all been there.
I imagine it's a little bit more, I imagine it might be for the reason that you do write the la-la-las first, right? So if you write a la-la-la, la-la-la, and you kind of throw away the last la-la-las, you don't know what words are going to be in there, but then you construct the phrase magic carpet ride, and you don't want to go back and revise the melody, then it just kind of fits there.
I thought it was an interesting. Right? I thought it was actually kind of like an interesting rhythmic thing.
Yeah, I didn't mind it really
because it did. It is something that you do notice because it is sort of a slightly. But I thought it was kind of like sort of like da da da. Like it was sort of a very interesting thing. But Bruce, why don't you tell the listeners something cool?
Well, we'll see here. You know, you're just listening. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM. And tonight our guest is Jeff Allen Greenway, also known as Jag. Don't forget, we love to hear from you. So tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio or via email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And we'll share your thoughts in real time, like we did with Eric Sorensen's thoughts. Thank you, Eric. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mention on Song Talk Radio on our resources page, songtalk.ca/resources or resources. You can say it either way, it still works. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have a very special show next week. We're going to showcase protest songs.
Yes, yeah.
And Phil and Neil and I are going to choose protest song. I've got mine chosen already.
Cool.
And August 2nd, we have Andrew Seok, who's an amazing musical theater composer and lyricist and singer and actor and director. He's just amazing.
Threat.
Saw him at the Fringe. And he was amazing. Mm-hmm. And August 9th, we've got Patrick Ballantyne coming back again.
Yes.
This is great. It's the return of Patrick Ballantyne. If you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup. That's Sunday, July 24th. That's this Sunday from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club that's in the Annex area. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. Back to you, Phil.
Thank you very much, Brucey. So now you're actually a music teacher as well, I think, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Now, I noticed on your Facebook profile it said that you work for Yamaha Canada.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, so can you tell how that works?
It was kind of interesting because I was studying to be a musician many, many years ago, and I thought I was going to be a huge rock star traveling the world and playing huge festivals, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then I kind of fell into teaching. I wasn't planning to do it at all. I just had a friend who asked me to take over a few classes because he was a bit ill. And I had no idea what I was doing, and I went in there trying to teach university-level theory to a six-year-old, which didn't go so well. But then I actually took to it. I found it was really interesting, especially dealing with children, and that's mainly who I teach. I teach children from about age 5 to 10 for the most part, and it's wonderful. You get a great feedback from them. You get a lot of energy from them. They ask you the craziest questions. I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now. Yeah. I just remember we teach basic cadences to some of the kids, and when I played a dominant chord to them once, they said that it sounded crunchy, which is interesting thing to call it.
Yeah, for our listeners at home who don't know what a cadence is, can you tell us what a cadence is?
It's a series of chords. The chords we teach are the 1 chord, the 4 chord, and the 5-7 chord. When we teach basic theory to the kids, and so the dominant chord is the 5 chord. This one here,
right?
It's crunchy,
and the cadence is when you go from the 5 back to the.
Exactly. Yeah. Usually, most like this is the perfect cadence, as they call it.
Yes.
Right. 5-1.
I think it's really interesting about kids because they don't. The fact is, it's challenging to talk about music. Like when I pick up the New Yorker magazine, some guy's written a whole 2-3 pages about music. I find it really awful sometimes, unless they can find the language of metaphor. Mm-hmm. Because, you sing music or you listen to music play, but to talk about music. So the kids actually are coming up with the phrases to help them to understand it, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, crunchy is a direction you would give to a guitarist. I want the crunchy sound now, right?
Yeah.
So that's very cool.
That's fun.
Well, and actually, yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to mention about the last song we heard was your ending before your coda part was that the Let It Go part, and then you were actually doing different chords underneath that,
mm-hmm.
which is almost like a sort of a cadence in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what that was?
In the last part, the D major part.
Yeah, just before your coda part. You know, it's.
Yeah, it kind of started out the same as the C major chorus, but I added a few extra chords in there. Let me see if I remember.
Yeah, there was a difference there.
Yeah, especially here.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different kind of suspension.
Right.
The basic chords are the same, but, you know.
Just a couple of variations on it.
Right? Yeah, a few different variations.
Right. Now, so do you just kind of wander through variations until you find something that you like, or is there some rule of thumb that you're using?
Yeah, no, I actually, everything for me is by feel. You know, I just I'll be singing the melody and trying to figure out which chords fit, and I'll just go with whatever I think sounds nice.
Okay.
There's not a lot of theory involved at all. I find when I try to write that way, if I try to think theoretically, it doesn't have the same feel. The song ends up sounding a little bit cold. And,
well, certainly when you listen to that last chorus, it does sound, like harmonically, it sounds kind of fuller and thicker and more tense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe not crunchy, but you know,
good
those,
words.
Those sorts of things, you know?
Yeah. Well, I liked it just because it was, you know, you were repeating the lines, but not repeating the music. You were like sort of, you know, it was a really subtle kind of very polished, you know, very songwritery thing to, you know, to do.
Songwritery.
Which I thought was good.
Thank
you. Teaching kids sort of helped you think of music in a sort of different way?
I think so. It has pluses and minuses. Sometimes I'll go home and I start writing songs like... because that's what we do in our classes.
Oh, right.
And I have to kind of give myself a kick to the head and try to remind myself of other chords.
Have you written a children's song?
No, I've played on some children's albums, but not myself.
You're not called to do it. You don't feel drawn to that at the moment.
No, I've written some instrumental pieces for some of my students.
Oh, great.
You know, sort of like rock and roll, fun, bluesy type stuff.
Right.
But not specifically like a song for kids.
So, yeah, so I think we have another song that you want to play.
This is my single, my new single, which I just released a few months ago, this one was a long time in coming. I actually did a couple different versions of this, and this was actually done in a totally different way than my previous EP. It was recorded mostly at home, like I mentioned, but I had some really good friends work on this. My friend Cheryl Beattie, who's a fantastic singer-songwriter in her own right, was nice enough to sing backups for me on this, and also my friend Andrew Lauzon, who's a really fantastic bass and guitar player as well as producer and mixer, mixed this. It was a little different direction for me, and it's a song again, sort of about relationships, but in a different sense. And I think you'll see that when you see the lyrics and when you hear it.
All right,
and the lyrics again are available on songtalk.ca. Just click the link and follow along.
And this is called I Need by Jeff Greenway.
I need a love, not a hand to hold. I need a love, I don't need a good soul. I need a love, I need the spark and the fire. I don't need to be told what it is I desire. And as I step away from all that she can say, she says, I need a love, don't come home. I need some time, some things I have to find on my own. need some time just alone. And I need a love, and I don't care what it takes. I'll bend this friendship till it breaks. She doesn't need this love I bring. She's looking for some other thing. She says, I need a love. Don't come home. Met the demand, but somehow I still worry that she's waiting for me to rescue her from herself. And she still can't say I'm sorry. So I say I need a love. I need a heart I can hold. I need a love. I need a good soul. And as she steps away,
and that was I Need by Jeff Greenway on Song Talk Radio on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto. What a great song. Yeah, those beautiful backing vocals, thank I have to you admit. I listened to the song awesome quite a few times. It's a really, really strong tune.
Yeah, thank you very much. Strings, too.
And a strange, yeah, the arrangement. But the just, I think it's really worthwhile. I mean, it's a great song, but just, you know, for people who are arranging, to listen to how those background vocals were arranged. They weren't just done, you know, echoing what the main vocal was doing, but almost like a really soft counterpoint. Mm-hmm. And it really gives it that really professional feel. It's an interesting song, you know.
It's interesting structurally. Like, it doesn't it doesn't really have a chorus. It's got...
Well, it's a refrain, I guess.
It's got a refrain that happens mm-hmm in sort of almost asymmetrical places, you know? Like, it happens at the top, and then happens at the end of the B section, and then mm-hmm at the top again, and somewhere in the middle, and kind of, it's really cool. Like,
but what's great is that it's also, like, I'm a big thing about titles, because, of course, as no one really buys albums anymore, it's... singles, a good title is important, so people can find the song, you know, on the internet. But it's always clear what the song titles are, even though it's not traditional placement, you know, which I thought was quite interesting. But interesting, you know, about Don't Come Home and Please Come Home, I thought that was an interesting
twist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're doing that kind of all over the place, because at the top it's I Don't Need a Good Soul, and then at the bottom when you're singing, as opposed to she's singing, you're saying, I need a good soul, where she said, I don't need a good soul. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I mean, if you're not, maybe if you're not actually reading the lyrics and you're just hearing it in the background, you may not even pick up on that, because it's kind of mm-hmm subtle, right? Mm-hmm. But it's nice to have that kind of duality, or the kind of role reversal.
Yeah, we got a tweet in from Sharon Earhart. So if there's a crunchy, is there a crispy in music?
Absolutely.
I think so, yeah.
If there's a crunchy, there's got to be a smooth.
I think there's certainly a tasty.
Crispy.
Yeah,
it's crispy crunch.
Can you talk about
chunky peanut butter and smooth peanut butter.
Oh, right. All right, but we digress.
Yeah, getting off a bit on
hungry.
A tangent
we'll
here.
We're talking about metaphors, right?
This is the wacky show.
We're the wacky show. So can you talk about the don't come home and please come home? I thought that was an interesting change.
Yeah, this song sort of originally came to my mind as a duet.
Totally work as a duet. Yeah, the
inspiration for this actually came from there's a song by the Beautiful South from the 90s.
Well, which song?
I'm trying to remember the name of the song. It was a ballad, and it actually was a duet. And
the rocking chair?
No,
it's not a duet. No.
No.
Shoot.
Anyway, yeah, I should remember the name, but I don't right now. But it was a really interesting song because it was a duet, and it was two people's point of view in a relationship. So it was the female point of view and the male point of view, and they didn't see eye to eye, basically, in the song. And that was sort of the starting point for this. I was thinking something along the same lines. But I didn't want to do it as a duet. I wanted to do it, sort of speaking from two different points of view, but just myself singing it. And so that's sort of what the song is. It kind of represents two points of view. So the first point, or the first part of the song is the girl's point of view, and then the last part is my point of view, basically.
Right, right. So but I just thought the don't come home was, mm-hmm. I thought, sort of an interesting line.
Yeah, and I think that it shows, sort of a difference in thinking, too. If you read the lyrics at the beginning, the person who's speaking at the beginning is very, very, very clear on what she thinks love is. And she has certain, certain things that she holds dear that are very important to her.
Right.
And basically she wants those things, and if she doesn't feel she's getting those things, then she's ready to leave the relationship,
right,
basically.
Right.
So that's where the don't come home comes from.
Right.
And then the last part is I think it's from the other point of view of the other person, but it's kind of them coming to terms with, okay, so we're seeing love in a different way,
right,
but maybe, we can still make this work.
I thought it was an interesting change, because it kind of is hopeful at the end, which is,
And you actually use the bridge to literally bridge the her to the I, the she to the I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's actually used as a bridge.
It's actually used as a bridge.
Well, and it's interesting because it's such a clear bridge, too,
Yeah, exactly. It's a bridge musically, it's a bridge lyrically. Thematically,
I liked I liked your silences a lot. Like you had a really serious break just before, and before was that the bridge? And I gave all I can, and I'm at the demands.
The
before the bridge, you went completely tacit, quiet, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then at the to rescue her from herself, you went completely to silence. And I think this is a great thing for your listeners out there. Use silence in songs. It's incredibly powerful, especially in rock. This had a really strong, I would call it galloping type rhythm, especially on your bass drum effects you're having. Mm-hmm. Brum, brum, reminded me of Jan Arden's arrangements, actually, which is a huge compliment.
Mm-hmm.
But the bass drum there going, and the toms or whatever, there was something really galloping about it. So in a song where that's happening and then you bring it to a silence, it's like, whoa, and then you built it up again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. Was that something you had written in the song, or was it your producer?
Yeah, no, I produced this myself as well.
Oh, okay, great.
So, yeah,
you did a good job.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I definitely wanted a stop there because it's almost like a change of mindset,
right.
And it's almost like a reset button.
Yeah, right. Turn around.
Yeah, can you talk about how you wrote the background vocal line? I'm quite interested in that because it was, I thought, really effective.
Yeah, thank you. That sort of came at the end. So after I'd written all the other parts, and come up with all the lyrics, I was listening to a demo that I'd written of it, or that I'd recorded of it, and I kept hearing that melody in my head, the da-da-da-da-da-dum, over top of the verse section of the song.
Mm.
So I started thinking, okay, so what can I do with this? And I wrote out the melody, and I started thinking of some words that would go, and I always pictured it being a high vocal part, and I think Cheryl did a fantastic job on that.
Oh, so
it's actually counterpoint then, is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
See, I know these big words. Counterpoint. And if you don't know what counterpoint is, just give us a tweet, and
that's right.
Neil will explain it to you.
Jeff, can you just demonstrate very quickly on the piano, like the difference between the A section and the B section? Because you got the I need a love, and that section even musically has an enormous amount of tension to it. Like mm-hmm. it sort of keeps it moving, like Bruce was saying. But it's got that tension. I think it's even in the chords you picked. But mm-hmm. then when you go to the and as I step away. It, mm-hmm. it kind of resolves. Can you just talk about how you developed that chord pattern?
Yeah, sure. I mean, initially the verse pattern was what I had come up with, this part here. And I just kept repeating that over and over again.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find a way to get out of that and to go to a different section. And this is the one place where I did actually use a little bit of theory knowledge. I used a substitute chord for the first chord. If you're in the key of B flat, which this song is in, the first chord, which is a B flat chord, you can substitute what they call the 6 minor. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did going into the second part. It was a G minor chord. Uh-huh. So, almost the same chord progression,
yeah,
but using substitute chords and going up. Okay. As opposed to going down.
It feels much more resolved, the second mm-hmm. section.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, and you know, when we're talking about one and three chords, it's like if you take the root chord, it's a one chord. The mm-hmm. next chord would be the two chord. And then you have the three chord, which would be the third, the fourth.
Yeah, if you check out our show on chord substitutions.
On chord substitutions, yes.
You learn it all.
Yeah.
Circle of fifths. Let's all gather around the circle of fifths.
Yes.
And have a barbecue.
Yeah.
Light fire.
This is great. It's always, your stuff is great. Interesting, watching you play this, the piano, because when I play the piano, because I'm self-taught, and I play the piano like I play the guitar. Mm-hmm. So I just play guitar chords on the piano, which means I'm always doing a root and a fifth in the bass.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you're actually just playing one note in the bass, which is interesting. I need to explore that a bit more.
Yeah, it depends on the song. Actually, Cavalry, I was doing a lot of sort of two notes in the left hand.
Yeah.
In the bass part, but this song, because the right hand's so busy,
yeah,
I had to simplify the left hand a little bit.
Yeah, that's great. So, how do people get more of your music, Jeff?
I have a website. It's jeffallangreenway.com, mm-hmm. Jeffallan, greenway.com. That has links to pretty much everything else, but I'm also on Facebook, I'm on YouTube. All of my songs are up on iTunes as well.
Oh, great.
And some of them are available on streaming sites too, such as Spotify.
Brilliant. And when's the next, and when's the new one coming out?
I haven't set a definite date yet. I'm waiting to see when it actually gets finished. So I'm in the mixing stage right now.
Right.
So hopefully by the fall at some point.
Right. Okay.
Great.
Because that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. And of course, we'd like to thank our Jeff. We'd like to thank our guest, Jeff Greenway, for returning to our nice little show. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
And please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, via email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio, or stop by the website at songtalk.ca. And also, you can subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. And don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on Song Talk Radio at our resources page at songtalk.ca/resources. And if you are in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup on Sunday, July 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup and free to attend the roundtable. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all those juicy details. And we'd like to thank CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto for putting up with all our shenanigans. We'd like to thank Nicole Di Donato for manning the social media channels. And of course, we'd like to thank you, the home listener. And we'd like to thank
Magnusine Handbook
and Sharon Earhart for sending us their Twitter thoughts. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
Mondo Art.
You can follow Bruce
at Bruce Harrett.
You can follow me at the Phil Emery. You can follow Nicole at
Nicole K. DiDonato.
And you can follow Jeff Greenway at
Jeff Greenway.
Jeff Greenway. And please stop my website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest on this very show. So that's all the time we have tonight. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.
Keep writing songs.
And we do have a bit of sad news to report. A good friend of our show and a good personal friend, Christine Gates, passed away on Sunday. Very sad. She lost her battle with cancer. Possibly one of the most positive people I think I've ever met. She was on our show two times, and our condolences go out to her husband, Chris, and her family, and all for us all, actually.
You'll be missed, Christine.
Yes.
You'll be missed, and we're going to play one of her songs now for people to hear.
Yeah, this is called Love Your Mother.
Our mother's raging once again. When she's not happy, no one else can be. In the ocean lies my answer. I find balance. Only she can see. I see lightning, I hear thunder. Why do we do the things we do? In the storm lies my answer. It's her voice coming through. It's her voice. Feel her beauty round me in the sky above.
Shelter is worth Mother Earth. I know.